Coming up on Tech News Today, the next iPhone may be curved, how Netflix and YouTube are dominating the internet, and Amazon wants to deliver you your stuff on Sunday. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, November 11th, 2013, Veterans Day. Thank you for your service, veterans. Tech News Today is brought to you by TechServe. TechServe assists U.S. businesses of all sizes with their technology needs, including Apple, Avid, Adobe, and HP solutions. Visit TechServe.com/TNT and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT11. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason L.
Sarah Lane has the day off, but we still got all the greatest tech news for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Bloomberg sources say Apple will launch two new iPhones in late 2014. That's not the surprising part, but they will have big screens and curved glass, according to sources. The new models would be 4.7 inches and 5.5 inches, and both phones would have glass that curves downwards at the edge. Bloomberg sources also said Apple is working on pressure-sensitive touch, but that likely would not be ready in time for a 2014 launch.
Amazon will begin delivering packages on Sunday in New York and Los Angeles in partnership with the United States Postal Service. Sunday delivery will be available in London as well using Amazon's own trucks. To get Amazon's goods on a Sunday, you'll need to be an Amazon Prime member. Amazon plans to roll out Sunday delivery to more cities next year.
A leak on Amazon revealed Motorola's new budget phone. The Motorola G will run £160 for the 16-gigabyte black model and will come to the UK on November 14th. Motorola invited press to a London event on November 13th. Like the X here in the United States, the G will apparently have switchable backplates, a 4.5-inch 1280 by 720 display, quad-core 1.2 gigahertz Snapdragon processor, and come with Jelly Bean, not Kit Kat, for the Android operating system. Here in the U.S., the Moto X Automaker website has added Verizon, Sprint, and T-Mobile to the site, ending AT&T's exclusivity over customization of that handset.
According to a new study by Sandvine, Netflix and YouTube account for over half of downstream primetime internet traffic in North America for the month of September. Netflix has over 30%, while YouTube is a bit under 20%. Facebook accounts for 1.31% of downstream traffic, beating out Hulu, which has 1.29%.
German newspaper Der Spiegel reports the British GCHQ agency uses a quantum insert technique to target employees of two global roaming exchange providers. Those are the providers which handle the interchange of vast amounts of mobile internet traffic. GCHQ allegedly used the secret servers to serve spoofed versions of LinkedIn and Slashdot pages that delivered malware to the targets. A similar attack was reported earlier this year to have been used against employees of OPEC.
Sony's released an unboxing video of the PlayStation 4, but it's not one of your run-of-the-mill unboxing in a white room. It's actually a parody of a Daft Punk video. A gloved individual removes several items from the box, including a quick start guide, an HDMI cable, a DualShock 4 controller, and the PlayStation 4 itself. The video closes, revealing the gloved person to be Sony Worldwide Studios president Shuhei Yoshida.
According to the latest edition of Ericsson's Mobility Report, smartphone subscriptions will reach 1.9 billion worldwide by the end of this year. By 2019, that number should triple, and smartphone traffic will decuple. That's increased by 10 times. I just wanted to say decuple. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Still, smartphones only account for 25 to 30% of all mobile subscriptions. The expected tripling of subscriptions will be driven by smartphone additions and adoption in Asia Pacific, Middle East, and Africa.
YouTube's now requiring users to have a Google Plus account to post comments, and people are not happy about it. YouTube co-creator Jawed Karim wrote a comment on his YouTube page wondering why he'd have to have a Plus account just to comment, although it's not known whether his account was hacked or if it's a legitimate comment. A music video on YouTube is also racking up views. It's entitled, quote, "My Thoughts on Google Plus." The song mocks Google Plus, Google's web design, and its chorus rhymes with "duck you, Google."
Luck? No.
Maybe.
Okay. Some of you love Blu-ray, and some of you are excited that the Xbox One will support Blu-ray. Some of you even love 3D on Blu-ray, but those last two categories may have to be separate groups for a while. Major Nelson confirmed 3D output on the Xbox One back in May, but Microsoft told CNET the Xbox One will not ship with the capability, though it could be added later on. Sony confirmed to Engadget that the PS4 will come with both 3D Blu-ray playback and 3D gameplay capability, though there are no games with 3D yet, so you'll just have the capability for now.
Over at the Crackberry forums, a user posted pictures of a BlackBerry Z10 running the Google Play App Store. It appears to be the app version of Google Play and not just the web interface. This is leading to speculation that the next version of BlackBerry's OS will support Google Play and its wealth of apps. Other forum users are saying the pictures look fake.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by TechServe, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and technology provider, serving creative professionals at all levels. But you don't have to be a big company or even be in New York. They'd serve individual customers right up to Fortune 100 companies, offering a full range of Apple products from iPhones and iPads, iMacs, MacBooks, iPods, accessories, the whole ball of wax. TechServe also has a range of partnerships with top vendors to facilitate flexible, efficient, and creative solutions for all the things you do with your business. If you're thinking, well, okay, well, I might need a few desktops. What else could I do with this? You must have heard us talking about these Delta terminals. They have them in LaGuardia. They have them in Toronto. They have them in Minneapolis. And they have those iPads at every seat in the terminal. So you can sit there and get some flight updates or check your email. You can even order food and play games, browse the internet, of course. Over 1.5 million visitors use those iPads in Delta terminals. Now, what OTG Management, the company that runs the terminal, did is they got together with TechServe and said, hey, we need help rolling out all these iPad projects. So think about it. If TechServe is able to do full lifecycle management of the technology needs of a Delta terminal operator, they can definitely help you out. They also provide ongoing support. So if your enterprise has a problem after the rollout, they're not going to abandon you. They're still just a phone call away. If your business is considering integrating iOS technology or workplace, contact TechServe today and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. That's TechServe.com/TNT. And TechServe will help you assess your current or future iPad needs and give you advice to make it a success. That's TechServe.com/TNT. We thank TechServe for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, very happy to have Andrea Smith, independent tech journalist. You might have seen her work before on ABC or Mashable. Andrea, great to have you on the show.
Oh, it's great to be here with you.
Let's start off talking about curvy iPhones, that Bloomberg report, 4.7, 5.5 inch phones. I don't think that's a big surprise that we might see bigger iPhones next time around. But this is curved glass, not the curved screen. You've seen a lot of these curved screen things coming out of Samsung, for instance, or LG. And maybe down the road, not in 2014, pressure sensitive touch. So, Andrew, we were talking just a little bit before the show. You were saying, I don't know if I see the need for Curve. Just do you think Curve is going to help Apple sell a few more iPhones?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm just not a big fan of the whole Curve thing. I'm not sure that's something that's going to take off or that people see a need for yet. I haven't found that need yet, but who knows? I'm not quite clear what this pressure sensitivity is going to do. But I do think the larger phone size makes sense. I think that's something that they've needed to do. The phones look so small now compared to the Android phones, especially the Note, you know, the phablet kind of phones. I'm just not a big fan of the whole curved glass.
I think pressure sensitivity actually would make a lot of sense for artists. I've been using iPads for a while. And the way you can get pressure sensitivity is through a special Bluetooth 4.0 stylus. That will actually register the pressure, but that's really kind of janky. If the actual piece of hardware could have pressure sensitivity, it works a lot better for art, even when you're doing music, if you're hitting notes, hitting piano keys, that is. So you have this velocity-sensitive kind of thing going. I think that'd make a lot of sense. The Surface has it. The Samsung products have it. It makes more sense than curved glass to me for why people want this, because it could be a real solution for artists out there. You could do all kinds of things, the digital cartoons on it. I'd love it.
Yeah, and it'd be good for games too, the pressure sensitivity. I think though, when people are talking about curved glass here, all of our minds immediately go to like the flex phones or the bendy phones. And I imagine, I saw a prototype once leaked, and I didn't pay much attention to it because it was just somebody's pie-in-the-sky version. But given the way they described this Bloomberg curving down at the edges, it may be that all it does is extend the screen to the bezel. So in other words, the phone itself won't be curved, right? It won't be like holding a banana up to your phone. But the glass will curve down so that you can have the screen edge to edge. What do you guys think of if that's what is meant by this? And you have not only a bigger iPhone, but now an iPhone that's pretty much all screen, or an iPad even, that's like that. Does that sound like it makes more sense?
It does sound like it makes more sense. I mean, I think when people talk, you know, they hear about curved glass and a curved phone, they think, oh, great, can I fold it up like a flip phone and stick it in my pocket again or slam it down when I hang up on someone? And you're right, that's not what they're talking about. I think having the glass go all the way to the end and curve, you know, it gives that illusion of that pool, you know, that goes right from a pool into the ocean.
And infinity pool.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. And that's something actually that Johnny Ive has talked about before. And, you know, it could very well be that this is an illusion because he does talk about wanting the screen to just not matter, you know, that it's just something you look at and you don't think about anything else.
I mean, if that's the case, Samsung also had this, you know, was showing this
that's
kind of phone
of.
At
fine.
CES, right, where it curves off the side and it becomes kind of usable on the curvy side. Yet another thing for Samsung and Apple to duke it out with eventually, probably.
If it is a screen that continues to, you know, to go in those areas, it seems like Apple better have some rejection technology in there so you're not accidentally always clicking stuff. Because if the screen goes that far, that could cause an issue. I know with the new iPads, there's a lot of great edge detection. They can find out when your hand is on there. It doesn't do the incorrect inputs. So it could definitely be a beautiful visual if you start seeing this device. The idea that everything defers to the screen, that was the whole concept of the phone in the first place, like Andrew was mentioning. If you see this thing on the subway, you see it on the bus, you're like, oh, what's that phone? It adds a wow factor that Apple's been missing for a couple of years now because tons of phones are out there. They kind of look the same. If they had this, might give them an edge.
Right, and it's not just playing catch-up then. It becomes actually innovating again.
And I think you nailed it, Iaz. Here's what they do is they come out with the curved screen, and they have touch detection. So they say, oh, it's not going to come on that option that often. But enough people start to complain, like, yeah, it's still, it detects me sometimes by accident. And then 2015, pressure sensitivity. So now when you pick it up by the edge, as long as you're not picking it up too firmly, it solves that problem. Apple likes to do that, like sort of introduce a problem or maybe not address a problem right away. And then fix it in the next rev and call it revolutionary. That would fit the mode of operations. Got some interesting numbers coming out here from Sandvine about the domination of web traffic. We're used to Netflix being on top of this. What's the story this time, I asked?
Netflix is still on top of this. 31.6% of all downstream internet traffic in North America is Netflix. This was checking for the month of September. And this is information for North America only right now. YouTube, 18.6%. That's up from 17.1% in March. Amazon only gets 1.6%. That's their streaming video. Hulu, 1.3%. Like I mentioned, the news fuse, Facebook beating out Hulu when it comes to the amount of downstream traffic. P2P traffic is also down. It's actually now less than 10% of total daily traffic in North America. But YouTube around the world's got some pretty good wins here. In Europe, they're 28.7%. In Latin America, 36.8%. And in Asia Pacific, 31.2%. Andrew, what do you think companies could do to compete with Netflix? Because Netflix is just pretty much owning downstream traffic in North America.
Absolutely. They're killing it. It's amazing. I think, obviously, the first thing that people can do is create some of their own content, which is something that we know Amazon is working on. In fact, Alpha House is coming out, one of their new original series, because their offerings aren't really that good. And, you know, it's a way to make people more aware that, A, they exist, that they have content that you can subscribe to as part of Prime, and original content would be great. YouTube, I'm amazed at the numbers there. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I think what's happening with YouTube is they're growing their own talent. Their Fine Brothers and PewDiePies and folks like that continue to get bigger. And these channels like Maker Studios are driving that. But they also have that partnership with Vevo. And if you look at the top channels, they're almost always dominated by music artists because of that partnership with Vevo. But it shows that YouTube is gaining popularity as a place to go to watch more than just cat videos, the old cliche. On the other hand, I'm really, you could say maybe Hulu and Amazon have more efficient algorithms to compress their video, and that's why their numbers are low, but they wouldn't be that much lower than Netflix if that's all it was. I feel like Hulu, they've got broadcast television shows, they've got Criterion Collection movies, they've got a ton of originals. You just never hear about them. I saw a billboard for one the other day. Driving down the road, I was like, I've never heard of that show before. But they don't get any of the buzz because I don't think the broadcast networks want the Hulu originals to be top tier. They want them to be stuff that wouldn't have appeared on broadcast television otherwise. So Hulu needs somebody to be able to do a better job of packaging it, because I think a lot of people look at it as a place where, oh, I can't really catch up, or maybe I can catch up on a few things. And they don't understand the value proposition, because I feel like Hulu should be right in there with Netflix.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was thinking about maybe it's ubiquity because Netflix is on pretty much every single device you could think of. And then I realized Hulu's pretty much on those same devices. If you think of the Roku, the Xbox, if you think of PlayStation 4, you can get both of them. So why isn't Hulu getting the same kind of traffic when it's on pretty much every box? It could just be about buzz. Amazon, I keep forgetting that they have an instant video service because they do so many crazy things like that introduction of a Sunday delivery, or if they're going to have a new Kindle Fire. It's kind of strange that that potentially their Prime Video selection gets lost in the shuffle because Amazon does so many different things compared to Netflix or Hulu.
Yeah, and the Hulu thing, I mean, I think it's also, it's buzz, and I think maybe people just really don't want to spend $10 a month more. You know, if you're not a cord cutter and you are paying cable fees, people don't want to pay more money on top of it. I don't know why they go to Netflix as opposed to Hulu, maybe because Netflix finally has better offerings, but I think that Hulu is not something that's forefront on people's minds when they think about watching exciting programming. I think you're right. I think it's about catching up on broadcast TV shows.
Yeah, Netflix has several years head start with their DVD service, and the streaming service even launched a long time before. So I think that's part of the momentum as well. And full disclosure, by the way, as most of the audience knows, my wife works for YouTube. So take anything I say, YouTube, with a grain of salt, I guess. But I don't know anything extra on the story than you guys do. Let's move on to Amazon and their Sunday delivery, partnering with the United States Postal Service. Now, some of you out there I know are thinking, wait a minute, I thought the U.S. Postal Service wasn't even going to deliver on Saturday. Now they're going to do Sunday for Amazon. Two separate things. Letter carriers they were talking about getting rid of on Saturday in the United States. But the United States Postal Service has always done Sunday deliveries in special cases for certain companies if they want a contract. And that's what Amazon's doing. They're the biggest company to ever take advantage of it. But they're saying, yeah, we'd like to do this. U.S. Postal Service says, okay, we can start this right away in L.A. and New York. We've got enough staff for that. We need to do a little retooling if we want to roll it elsewhere. So starting November 17th, if you're in L.A. and New York, you'll see this pop up in your delivery options. It'll say, okay, if you buy today on Friday, it'll deliver on Sunday. They hope by 2014 to have this come into Dallas, Houston, New Orleans, Phoenix, and other places. Those are the ones they mentioned in particular. Worldwide Ops VP Dave Clark told the Wall Street Journal that they're actually going to start doing this later this month in the UK as well. There, they're going to have to use their own trucks and create their own shipping service, which I think is an interesting wrinkle to it as well. Andrea, what difference does this make? Do you think this really will increase Amazon, or is it just, you know, a couple percentage point in Amazon worlds is a few million dollars?
Yeah, but you know what? I think this is a great idea. I mean, I'm all for it. And I have to say, I'm a paid Amazon Prime subscriber. So think about it. You know, they used to do free shipping over $25. They just increased that recently to $35, I think. $79 gives you an Amazon Prime membership, which those streaming shows that, you know, nobody really is aware of. But it gives you this option for free Prime delivery and now free Sunday delivery. And I think it's brilliant. I mean, there are many times when I sit here and order something and I'm just, you know, so excited that it shows up the next day and I don't have to do anything. And I think it's a great boon for the post office. I mean, you know, I know that they used to do it with other companies and they've had contracts, but you know, I get FedEx deliveries and UPS deliveries, and it's really great to see some of that money going to the post office as a contract. It's a nice revenue boon for them.
I also pay for Amazon Prime. So it makes it a lot easier to buy stuff when you're just like, oh, you know I pay a little bit extra to get on an Amazon. I don't even look for other deals because I know I'm going to get it so quickly. I might research on Amazon and see that way. But it just makes it easier and easier to part with money when it comes to Amazon. Instead of having to go out on a Sunday to go get something, you can have it delivered by Sunday. It's that's That's really intriguing. I think they're going to make a killing on this because there's really no... It seems like it's a hassle to go to another site now. When you go to like a buy.com, you got to fill out your information again. It's like, why would I do this? I'll go back to Amazon and get everything in a consistent experience.
Yeah, that might be it. I mean, the fact that you have to be an Amazon Prime subscriber means they're not making money off the shipping itself, right? They're not, because that would be one way is to say, oh, well, you can get it on Sunday and people will pay for faster delivery then. That's not going to happen because Amazon Prime subscribers get the free 2-day delivery and most of them choose that. Amazon's counting on this being attractive to keep Amazon Prime subscribers coming. And Amazon Prime subscribers obviously make them money. That's why they continue to do the program. And so they say enough people won't buy something on Friday that they would have bought otherwise and maybe not buy it at all because it won't come until Monday or Tuesday, and that having a Sunday delivery option will swing the tide. I feel like, you know, in my gut that, well, if I'm on Friday and it's 2-day free shipping, I'm going to order it anyway. It's just kind of a bummer that it won't come. I'm not sure that it really swings that many sales, but Amazon seems to think it will.
Well, I don't know that getting it on Sunday is going to swing that many sales, although I think it's great to do it right before the holiday season. But sure. I do think that it's that whole idea of, well, it's Friday, you know, I could order it and it will be here by Sunday, or I could make time to go to the mall or wherever I have to go to pick this up and see if I can find it. As a Prime subscriber, you know, it is just so much easier to say it's here, it's coming, it's free shipping. I'm going to go ahead and buy it.
And also
I hadn't thought about the, you know, obviating the need to leave your house, you know, if you really want it. Oh, I guess I will go down to the store. That's good.
Well, there's the whole customer satisfaction aspect, too, because we've seen these studies where people have like a warm, fuzzy feeling when they think of Amazon. This will just continue it because it's like, I can get my stuff all the time thanks to Amazon. It's going to just help that for that, I'm telling you, that warm, fuzzy feeling that people have for Amazon. You see that box? It's a new toy. Super excited.
And you know, one other thing, a lot of companies are doing away with their free shipping. There's some companies who used to say free shipping over $50 or free shipping if you have our store credit card. And they're doing away with that because they're losing so much money on shipping. Amazon seems to be doing it right and they figured it out. And so to me, I'd much rather go there. And I know a lot of people who would rather go there, get the free shipping and get it delivered.
Yeah, I guess the only downside I can see is that Amazon once again is dominating and driving more people to fringes of the retail business. But for the moment, as a consumer, I love the idea of being able to get some stuff on Sunday, especially because I happen to live in LA too. Let's take a quick break and thank Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Big thanks to them for supporting the show over the years. They're big time now. I don't know if you guys have seen their TV commercials, man, but they're slick. Yep. And they make it look awesome because it is awesome. That's what I use. I use it for TomMerrittBooks.com. I use it for SwordAndLaser.com. And it makes my sites look decent in a way that I never could. I won't give you the URL, but there are URLs out there of sites that I've designed that you will be able to see and go, yeah, should have used Squarespace for that one, Tom. 20 new beautiful templates for you to start with, style options you need to create a unique website, and it's easy to use. Makes it fast and easy to update your site. Keep it working. If you do have a question, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they're available on email. Inexpensive at just $8 a month. That includes the hosting. Right, the reliability of the hosting, as well as a free domain name if you sign up for a year, and then the Squarespace templates and the content management and all of that sort of stuff. And it's mobile ready. I love the fact that when I go to a Squarespace site on my phone, it looks like it was built for the phone, but nobody had to do anything. That's just the templates are adaptive for whatever screen size your visitors are looking at. Search engine optimized, hosting included, even the code is beautiful. Start a trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. Just do it. Or make one for somebody else and hand it over and say, look, you need a good website. Here's what it looks like. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT11 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Digital content, digital media, textbooks. Chegg's got their IPO coming out later this week, and Intel has acquired somebody interesting here.
Yeah, now I'm realizing I don't really know how to pronounce it. Is it No or Kano?
I think it's No. It's K-N-O.
I think it's No.
So the company's, it's spelled K-N-O. I guess it's a play on knowledge, that word. But yeah, so Intel just bought No, an education software company, and No's apps already can be accessed on iPad, Android, Windows 7, and Windows 8 apps. Nosebooks have additional features for teachers so they can kind of track how the students are going with these actual textbooks. Now, TechCrunch reports that the co-founder of the company and CEO, Osman Rashid, will not be joining Intel, but the rest of the team will be coming to Intel. Intel's blog post on the acquisition says Intel's working on creating an ecosystem of hardware, software, and digital content for education. Now, Intel Education already makes a couple of tablets, actually, a 10-inch and 7-inch Android tablets. The acquisition also means that Intel's digital content library will contain over 225,000 titles. Andrew, what do you think about Intel's push into education?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I haven't actually been that aware of their push into education. I mean, I knew that they were working on something, but not enough to have acquired No. I've covered No for a couple of years. I interviewed Osman a couple of years ago when I was at ABC when he first started this. And it really was innovative because it was a way of taking really boring, dull content that kids look at day in and day out and making it interactive. And making study guides and making teacher guides and just turning it into a way that kids learn, that they want to learn, because this is how they're using technology today. For Intel, I think it's a pretty smart move. There's other companies trying to get into this space. I know at the IFA show in Berlin just recently, I talked to Lenovo. They're also making a push into education. Other companies are making big Surface tables that'll go into classrooms for teachers to put in their curriculum and have education turned into a game. So I think it's a really smart move on Intel's part to make this part of an ecosystem if they already have hardware they're using.
Yeah, the education marketplace is a great play for companies. It shows enterprise that they're able to roll out large rollouts, and then it's good PR because they're helping education, and it does make them money. They're selling these things. It's not a charity. I think what's more interesting to me about this in particular is Intel's software strategy. Remember, they've been acquiring software companies, McAfee, the most famous one, to pair up with their hardware. And in light of the fact that we heard these rumors that Intel is getting rid of its media division, the one that's been working on that OnQ set-top box and possibly either partnering or selling it entirely to Verizon, for them to go out and say, yeah, but education... that makes sense in the strategy. I think Brian Krzanich is really forming up a very enterprise, level-headed, hardware-driven approach to making sure that when the x86 chip eventually finally winds down its sales, which it may, they've got other strong offerings, and I think this is one of them.
Yeah, it seems interesting that they're going to this marketplace where they're effectively competing against Apple with its iPad when it comes to education, Google and its Chromebooks getting into education, Lenovo's out there as well, as Andrea mentioned. But if Intel can have the software that runs on everything, that to me is a little bit more intriguing, the fact that these apps run on everything else. So if Intel has, if x86 just winds down, they still have a future in software. It is an interesting move to see how Intel's been going under Krzanich.
Well, and you got to look at that. They want to be selling mobile processors, right? Because if x86 winds down, it's because the desktop market is winding down. One way to sell mobile processors is to make tablets and have the software bundled on them that makes the choice easy for the marketplace. So in the case of schools, they say, look, we're going to give you the tablets. We're going to give you the software all in a package, one deal that's budget friendly, service friendly. And I think that's pretty attractive for schools.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I talk to a lot of parents and they say that their schools, the kids are getting iPads or the schools are getting iPads. And what happens is, in some cases, they're sitting in a closet because nobody knows what to do with them. They don't have the existing curriculum. The teachers aren't sure what the protocol is. To have it all together where the software is there, the system is there, the whole ecosystem is together, and they're able to make money off of it, I think just makes it a whole seamless process.
All right, another way to make some money is to have a catalog. But the paper catalog hasn't really found an exact analog in the online world. Or has it today, I ask?
Today, something has changed in Flipboard because Flipboard updated its iOS and Android apps to include catalogs. It allows users and companies to create shopping catalogs with red price tags that link directly where the item can be purchased. Now, users and retailers can mix traditional articles and images in these catalogs. Clicking through to a price tag, though, brings you to a regular website where you still have to input your information and on your shipping information and payment. Flipboard right now does not handle the payments. A number of retailers, including Banana Republic, Fab, and ModCloth, are launching catalogs on Flipboard today. Andrea, what do you think of Flipboard's moving to catalogs, and how soon before we see them actually processing payments? Because that seems like that could be some money.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's a great move for them. I love Flipboard. I used to read it on the train and on my commute all the time. It's a great app. It's a great service. I think it'll be wonderful being able to see catalogs on it. But I, for one, until I can look at that object and say, I want this, I'm going to buy it right now, it's kind of a waste of time for me. And I think that Flipboard's really going to have to figure out how to turn it into a way where they can be the middleman and take that money. I think looking at something and then maybe flagging it or going to that website and then doing another login in order to buy it, it's just not seamless enough.
And I think that's probably why Flipboard isn't trying to take a cut yet, is they're going slow and saying, all right, let's make it easier to tell you can buy something. Let's put these prices up here. Let's provide the links. But we know this isn't the ideal solution. So let's see what the uptake is in that case, see what companies who are partnering with us might want to create a specialized way of purchasing for Flipboard. And if that's the case, then we can talk money, because you're right. It's not an ideal situation at all. But it's also a little bit of a low risk thing for Flipboard, because they're just saying, hey, we're just letting the consumer know there's prices on these things.
Yeah, I saw the story actually on Flipboard this morning, and I was like, this makes the most sense in the world. It's that weird. There's this Flipboard's really kind of like a magazine. So to have a catalog in this instead of having to download a specific app for a catalog makes a lot more sense. And I think the users, there's 90 million Flipboard users. So how engaged they are and the way this information is presented makes a huge difference when you want to buy something. But if there are middle steps where you basically lose the excitement of, oh, look, I really saw this thing that was cool, I got to click this, another page opens up, got to put in my information, you could lose that impulse buy. And I think that's something that Flipboard should be looking at in the future. But I really think it's a natural way to look at these things. Flipboard and catalogs, they go really well together.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is a magazine, and especially if you're shopping for clothing, because it's such an ideal situation where you can pinch and zoom and really look at something up close and get a better look, and you've got the bright colors, just like going through a magazine, really. My question, and I wonder, is, you know, will they be able to come up with some sort of affiliate program where they get a cut from each of these catalogs that they bring in? Are they going to do it that way, or is it just going to be a service? It'll be interesting to see how that kind of shakes out when it all does.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if I make a catalog, I would like to have, you know, let's say I'm using a bunch of stuff from Amazon and I've got an Amazon referral program, I'd like my referral links in there, but that's not going to benefit Flipboard, and Amazon's not going to want to give a referral to the end user and Flipboard. So I think probably what's going to happen is Flipboard will likely try to make their money on customization with big companies. So with a Banana Republic like they're launching with, they'll figure out ways to make it more integrated and make it more of a Flipboard experience, and they'll take a cut there. Maybe these other user end customized catalogs that anybody can make will just be sort of a gateway point to say, hey, look at all these cool things, and you can also go to your favorite retailer online. But I think we all agree it's pretty smart for Flipboard, because it just fits. It's what you think of Flipboard. You think of visual, and that's what catalogs are. Let's finish off talking a little bit about the serious situation going on in the Philippines. Of course, you probably heard about Typhoon Haiyan, or they're also calling it Typhoon Yolanda in the Philippines. It's killed, depending on the estimates, 1,200 confirmed, but the estimates range up to around 10,000 people. There are obviously the normal ways to express your support or your help, such as Red Cross, but there's some tech companies that are trying to get behind this. GeekList has the GeekList Core of Developers. They do hackathons. So they're doing a special hackathon website where you can build tools to coordinate rescue efforts, supply distribution, things like food, things like emergency supplies, help people smooth out communications. And they're in conjunction with the government in the Philippines. This isn't just an upstart thing. So they're just getting started. They've got a lot of brainstorming going on. If you are a designer, a developer, a product manager, even social media folks, they want your help. Relief.io is a very early example of something they're trying to get going, which is a way to show relief effort needs by looking at Twitter posts and mapping them. It's in its very early days. So if you go there right now, you may not see anything compelling yet, but that's why they need your help. They need people to help figure out how to make this map more useful. Also, Google has launched the Google Person Finder, which is something they've done in a lot of these types of situations. And it's especially necessary given the devastation and the extent of the damage in the Philippines. People can log in and say, hey, I'm alive. Here I am. This is where I am. People can also go in and search for relatives or friends in there as well. And then there's Google's Typhoon Yolanda Relief Map, which provides updates on shelters and other information for those affected. If they can get onto the internet, they can find their way to relief centers or maybe even direct other people to relief centers. So not much to discuss here, except maybe, Andrea, you know, what do you think the role of people on the internet can best be in situations like this? I mean, obviously, the best thing would be if you were a trained professional to go over and help. That's not most of us. Do you think it's worthwhile for folks to engage in this sort of thing?
You know, I do. I think so. I mean, social media plays such a huge role. And I guess I'm speaking from remembering last year here on the East Coast. Sure. After Sandy. There were so many stories that we did about people, just regular people who decided, hey, let me make a map of, you know, where you can go to charge your devices. Here's a map of, you know, people who have a room in their apartment that if you're, you know, flooded out of your house, you can stay here. And they were all private. This is great what Google does all the time with each of these crises, because they really put the manpower that they have behind it and offer these awesome tools. But for people, you know, after Sandy, there was a website that helped people, you know, who were supposed to be getting married that weekend, you know, basically rearrange everything or donate food. So when you have a crisis like this, especially in such a huge area, there's only so much you can do on the ground. And the people who are there, I think, are already doing a pretty good job. So to be able to be in the background and say, let's use social, let's explain to people, since they maybe don't have cell phone service, how they can text, you know, text to a certain number and send a tweet or text to post to Facebook so that they can let people know that they're okay and well. I just think it's a huge role that they play.
Ayaz, what about you? What do you think about this?
Well, I mean, as a communications method, I mean, the internet's fantastic for that kind of thing. And the fact that you could have people that are on the ground who can actually put reports, that's basically what the internet gets used for when it comes to these things. But these efforts to help others, I think one of the weird things that people have to do is make sure their networks are working. I mean, that's really one of the bigger things. It's great that somebody like Google's behind something like a People Finder, because they have the servers that will stay up that you could find these things. But if you're going to be doing some of these smaller based things, these smaller relief efforts, they might have issues because they're getting inundated with requests. So if anything, it would be about making sure the networks are running so people can get this information.
I'm glad the Geek List Corps is actually working with the Philippines government, too. I think what can give this sort of thing a bad name is when people with the right intention get together and they do things like that that do cause more problems, maybe because they weren't expecting the flood of traffic or they're just spinning their wheels because it's not getting in the hands of the right people. So the fact that they're in cooperation is a good sign that this is going to possibly be more effective. So again, if you're a designer, if you're a coder, a developer, or even a social media expert, go to GeekList. It's geekli.st. That's the ST is the domain name, geekli.st/hackathon. And you'll see it listed there, Typhoon Haiyan GeekList Hack for Good. It's hashtag Hack for Good on Twitter as well. And our best hopes and prayers for everyone in the affected area of the Philippines. And my wife's got family in the north, in Manila. Most of those people are entirely unaffected. All her family is fine right now as well. But we hope that everybody else gets help and stays safe in the places that are affected. And we hope it does not cause any more problems as it rolls across Vietnam and other parts of the world. Let's move on to the randomizer. Had a straw poll today with our live audience, and it was very close. The winner of the straw poll, watch a supercomputer track trillions of particles in the latest universe simulation. This is a story over on The Verge about scientists trying to model the early history of the universe from the Big Bang. The project's called the Hardware Hybrid Accelerated Cosmology Code, or HACC, H-A-C-C. They needed a little bit of power here, so they got the Titan supercomputer at OCLF, the Sequoia at Lawrence Livermore Labs, and the Mira at Argonne Labs, using over 25 petaflops of peak processing power. You know, because they're simulating the universe. you need a little power behind that. And they're just doing early simulations right now, but they are pretty fascinating to watch as they try to track all of the particles. The point of this is to discover where to best look for dark matter. Dark matter is not visible. It's harder to detect. And so this will help them figure out, well, where would the dark matter most likely be for us to be able to take a look for it? Also, it's just crazy pretty, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of looks like the intro to either X-Men or Fight Club. Or the funny thing is, when I first looked up and I saw the video, I was like, are we looking at a sponge? It's like, no, it's a simulation of the universe being
born. This is a live wallpaper for your phone.
Oh, good.
It's a background for your phone.
It's really processor intensive, though. It just keeps it running all the time.
It's all your phone does is process this.
It's a webcam from 6.4 billion years ago. It just takes a while for
That's just awesome.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Good stuff over there. You can find, let's see, where is the source link? Oak Ridge Computing Facility has some of the stuff. Or you can go to The Verge and they have a good story on it up there. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle. Now, Iaz, did you this, right? You've already sold your iPad on Gazelle, but you're waiting for the iPad Mini to come out. Is that right?
No, I already put in my iPad to Gazelle. They received it within like a day, and I used the money to fund my iPad Air.
Okay, you got the Air.
I decided that the iPad, I just couldn't go to a smaller form factor. But yeah, I held on to my iPad for about, on the rumor of the introduction of the new iPads is when I decided to sell. Locked in a good price, and then I kept it for about 30 days because that's what they let me do.
That's the way Gazelle does it. They say, look, we know that either you're waiting for the Mini to come out or maybe you're trying to figure out how to get all the finances together. They'll lock in the quote for your iPad or your iPhone for 30 days, give you time to get everything together. And then once you, as Aya said, once you send it to them, they turn it around, they give you cash, they can pay by PayPal, they can pay by check. They even give you a bonus for an Amazon gift certificate. Find out what your iPhone is worth. They even buy broken iPhones and iPads. You might even get a little money for something you didn't think was worth it. And don't forget, with that Amazon gift card, you get a 5% bonus. Try it out today. Go to gazelle.com. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute. Go there. Gazelle.com. Find out. Do it now because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. Gazelle.com, we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. No Sarah Lane today for the calendar, Iaz. You want to flip for it?
I can just take it if you want.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
So that's Sarah's camera. Yeah, okay. So if she were here, she would not be sitting there because that's
set
framed
up
properly.
All right, so the calendar, I guess I'll take it. Tomorrow, the 12th of November, BioShock's Infinite Burial at Sea downloadable add-on is launching. And also tomorrow, Ignition, Future of Digital in New York City, and New York Times Deal Book Conference starts. That's all for the calendar.
On to the emails.
Incoming message.
Do you want to flip for this, or do you want this done?
I'll take this one. Chris wrote us from Cleveland and said, I'm going to tie together the seemingly unrelated cell phone stories from the past week and tell you why I am excited for 4K and curved phone screens. The reason is virtual reality, specifically the Oculus Rift. The Oculus Rift currently uses phone screens for the dual displays. Imagine two curved 4K displays in an Oculus Rift. The 4K screen is so close to your eyes the pixels do matter, and the curved displays can extend naturally into your peripheral vision. Am I right? Now, Andrea, we hadn't talked about the 4K part of this, but what do you think of Chris's idea of those screens being used in virtual reality?
Being used in virtual reality would be good. The 4K, again, that's another one of those things that I think, I'm not holding my phone like this. I don't really need 4K to see a phone. The virtual reality, though, at a show this past week, I saw an amazing virtual reality display that actually uses the Oculus Rift, like Chris was saying, and also incorporates you walking with sensors on your sneakers, walking through
an environment. Oh, is it the treadmill thing? Yeah.
It's the treadmill thing, yeah. And it just, talk about being immersed in a virtual world. It looked so cool.
Absolutely cool. So good point, Chris. I mean, I guess that doesn't really change the phone aspect because you're using phone size displays in the Oculus Rift, but I think he hit on something there. Good job. Well, that's it for this show. Andrea Smith, thank you so much. It was great having you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
AndreaSmith.org, if you'd like to follow what Andrea's up to. Do you have anything coming up or anything you want to plug, let people know about?
I'm producing Mommy Tech TV for CES in Las Vegas in January. So if you're going to be there, come on over. We're going to have some live programming from the show floor.
Excellent. AndreaSmith.org. And thanks again for joining us today. It's time for TWiT's annual audience survey. We want to hear from you. Please go to twit.tv/survey. Let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes. It helps us out to make TWiT even better than it already is. You can go to our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, to submit story ideas, vote on them. Let us know what things you'd like to hear us talk about. We pay attention to our subreddit audience. There's several tens of thousands of people in there, so it's a good place to let your opinion be known. Of course, you can email us, TNT at twit.tv. You can give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We have a YouTube channel. If you'd like to watch us there, you can subscribe at youtube.com/technewstoday. And of course, subscribe to the podcast, get the show notes and all of that stuff at twit.tv/TNT. We'll be back tomorrow when Lamar Wilson will be our guest. Looking forward to that. We'll see you then.